Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. The 13th of August, a Monday morning. The sun is rising and the Son of God is risen. We start our mornings together with that central declaration of the gospel, because there is always hope and always future with that tomb being empty. And this is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by one of our producers, Logan Rausch, who is running the sound and the board and hopefully is keeping things running smoothly all morning. Good morning, Logan.
Morning, Peter.
Good to see you again this morning. Did you have a good weekend?
Oh, I did. I got to enjoy new experiences and have a lot of friends over. It was a good time.
Well, it is a good time to always spend the weekend with friends like that. And Paul Perreault in the newsroom keeps that news flowing. I love coming in the mornings like this and seeing stacks of news to sort through. I think you probably know us well enough by now that especially some of the funny headlines, like eating cheese curds, are the ones that get my attention. We'll definitely address that later
it's
this
food.
Hour.
It's always food with you, isn't it?
It kind of is, Paul. I think you've got me figured out at this point as to what grabs my attention. But love having you over there. We'll get to you in just a moment with some news out of North Dakota with the weather. But love to be with you this morning all over our listening audience. I hope your coffee or tea is hot as you're heading off to work, just getting up, wherever you're finding yourself. We'll have a couple hours together of conversations with news headlines, current topics from a Christian perspective, and hopefully with faith and hope all the way through. So we'd love to have you join the show with texting or calling in at some of my favorite moments of the morning to hear from you all over, whether it's North Dakota or Iowa or Wisconsin and the East Coast streaming through. I love hearing from our listeners. So you can call or text at 877-933-2484. And Paul, I did just reference, we're definitely in the dog days of summer now. It's pretty hot, especially in North Dakota. It sounds like some records have been broken.
Oh, yesterday it was a dry heat, but it was a heat nonetheless. Williston hit 108. Our friends in Bismarck Mandan from Faith 89.1, pardon me, they hit 104, 106 in Minot. Now, thankfully, the humidities were low, but still, that's hot.
Is there a little break coming up at all for North Dakota weather
actually,
coming up?
Actually, yes. Temperatures are going to be falling much cooler over the next few days. Actually, only in the 70s and 80s, so it's going to seem like fall to them.
Yeah, that will be welcome relief. There's nothing like when it's in maybe high 50s, low 60s when you're trying to sleep, and 80s during the day. Well, we got a great show ahead. Later in Hour 1, we'll be joined by Adam Carrington, one of our favorites, who's a professor of politics at Hillsdale College. And we'll talk about how it seems like the lines between the reality show and the White House have sort of blurred this last weekend, as former apprentice person of fame Omarosa and the president got into a pretty public spat. And in Hour 2, Dr. Bruce Ashford will be with us to talk about the Pope's recent change in Catholic doctrine that states that capital punishment is always wrong. It's a huge change, Paul and Logan. I mean, this is one of those moments that I think it's worth stopping on for just a minute, because rare is the time that you see such significant doctrine change. This is the kind of stuff that history books is really going to reference. But first, we have an interview that I got to tape last week with Owen Strand, who is a professor of theology. And he gave us an update from the recent Revoice conference in St. Louis. And don't expect you to know what the Revoice conference was. Frankly, I hadn't heard of it either. But it is a conference that is an annual conference now, and it's supporting Christians that are living in a gay and lesbian lifestyle, but want to stay celibate in their faith. And it was fascinating, or in their practice of their sexuality, and hold on to their Christian faith. And I hadn't heard of this. It was fascinating. And it was a great conversation as Owen talked us through that. So it's coming up next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings, and thrilled to be joined on the line at this time by Owen Strand, who is an associate professor of Christian theology at Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, does some work with the Council of Biblical Manhood and Womanhood, and love speaking with Owen because there's so many conversations we're having these days in our culture, in our churches, around feminism and masculinity and how we just even interact in the gender continuum here. And so, Owen, I know that when we last had you on, we were previewing a Revoice conference that was going on around LGBT issues in the church, and that just happened recently. Can you kind of talk us through and remind us what was going on with this conference?
Yeah, the Revoice conference, which I did not attend, but did engage some online, was a conference that essentially sought to encourage professing Christians who in some form have an LGBT identity, take that identity on for themselves. So if you were to use a little bit of shorthand, Revoice was a conference that was really engaging the subject of what's called gay Christianity. And many of us were thankful that the leadership of Revoice has basically sworn off homosexual practice. But a lot of the controversy around the conference centered in Revoice's advocacy that a person can still have a gay identity, even as a believer. And so I'm personally thankful for that break that I just mentioned, that folks see that the scripture in no way enfranchises homosexual practice. But there is a very live question, and Revoice stirred up a ton of controversy, debate, and conversation over this second matter, whether or not a Christian can say, I'm a gay Christian, I'm a lesbian Christian, I'm a transgender Christian. And so this conference happened just a few weeks ago, actually in my state of Missouri in St. Louis, and had several hundred attendees. And was quite a watershed event for the year in evangelical circles.
Yeah, incredible conversation, as you mentioned, just that there is sort of unanimity in the idea that that the behavior is out of alignment with the kingdom if we're going to practice homosexual behavior, like any other kind of sexual behavior, whether it's pornography or extramarital sexuality, that wasn't in question. But it gets to this deeper question that you referenced, whether this is an identity that somebody carries if they are experiencing same gender attraction or some sort of dysphoria or confusion in their gender, if that's an identity or if it's an experience. And so kind of talk us through both sides of maybe what the support is for each side of it versus maybe where some of the issues might lie.
Yeah, and it does get further complexified, you could say, because there's what's called side B and side A in gay Christian circles. So side B is going to say what we were just talking about, you can retain the identity but break with the practice. And side A is going to say you can retain the identity and the practice. And so there's all sorts of conversations taking place right now around these issues. Somebody like me is going to say we have to be really careful along these lines, because our identity in Christ is determined by our washing, by our conversion, by our being born again. So someone like me is going to go to a text like 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 11, where the Apostle Paul actually deals with both partners in a homosexual encounter and says, such were some of you. So that's where I'm going to go to ground my own thinking on this kind of subject.
And I think that identity question is a big one. So if somebody, and I have a class on sexuality that I've taught for a number of years, and one of the things that comes up in that class often is not somebody who maybe is experimenting with their sexuality as an adolescent or an early adult, but somebody who has experienced some kind of attraction or some kind of reality confusion in their life at a very early age. And the temptation in that moment becomes to be, this must be my identity. Because I experienced something at 3, 4, or 5 years old, it therefore is my identity. But talk us through, and there's a lot of research being done of what happens pre-memory that doesn't necessarily mean this is an identity statement.
Yeah, and my own work centers more in the theological engagement of this issue, but basically there's a ton of research being done about the plasticity of the brain in various avenues, in various forums. So identity, as Will Smith says in the movie Hitch to Kevin James, identity is a very fluid concept. We are talking about identity as if it is a very fixed reality as human beings. But part of the way God made us, it seems to me, and studies seem to show, and even the scripture shows us very clearly, when we're talking about identity, we're dealing with something that can really change over the course of a lifetime, even the course of a childhood. We think about a parallel conversation, for example, with gender dysphoria, which you mentioned, you know, an individual who might think that they're a girl trapped in a boy's body at age 10, which is something that we're seeing in headlines all around us, that child may persist in that feeling over time. But there's a very good chance, according to medical professionals who have no stake in the kind of theological debate, there's a very good chance that that child actually will age out of those feelings. So when we're talking about gay identity, we just have to know that these matters are fundamentally not nearly as fixed as the culture says they are. People can really change in all sorts of ways fundamentally. By the way, a Christian person is somebody who believes absolutely in the power of change, because our nature actually changes when we come to Christ. It's not simply that, you know, we start believing a few more principles, we tack a few more on to those we've always held. It's that we get actually a new nature through Christ, through the grace of God. So there's a lot at stake here. There's a lot of different places to go. I completely agree with what you just said a minute ago, in that we have to handle identity very carefully, and we have to define it biblically before we go anywhere else.
Well, and I think that's one of the kind of the key questions to it, because it becomes a question of God at the end of the day if we are going to claim an identity that might be inconsistent with the biblical text and the invitations of the kingdom. But why would somebody maybe feel really pulled to just, I need to have this identity? Is it sort of a sense of confusion and insecurity and a way of understanding oneself? Or what's the general pull towards it?
There are all sorts of reasons, I think, why people feel pulled. Someone like me is going to go to Genesis 3 and say that the reason ultimately for all of the confusion that everybody experiences, and by the way, part of the stereotypes here are that, you know, a married man like me with a wife and kids, you know, I must be fully nuclear or something in my identity. And the reality is Genesis 3 has destabilized the entire world. It has drawn the actual historical fall of Adam and Eve means that we are all drawn to depravity and perversity in some way. When we are saved, we are born again and we gain that new nature, Romans 6, Romans 8 that I was talking about. But we still actually, according to Paul in Colossians 3, 1 through 11, we still have to put off the old man. In other words, we still have to fight this wildness, this perversity that is inside us. So to bring it back to your question, there are a range of reasons why someone may feel drawn to a gay identity or a transgender identity. It could be because of suffering in the home, abuse. It could be because of confusion. It could be because of a failure to attach well, as psychologists say, doctors say, to your same-sex parent. There could be all sorts of reasons. It could just be because you don't know why, but that's what you feel pulled to. There's debate about the brain. There's debate about genes. But as a Christian, we just have to be really clear. We know why this kind of identity-based confusion exists. It exists because of the fall, and so we are all pulled away in some form from our true human anthropological identity constituted by God in the creation. So what God does when he saves us is he doesn't make us something less than human or more than human. He brings us back to true humanity.
That's a great statement, Owen. I love the conversation here. Owen Strand, an associate professor of Christian theology at Midwest Baptist Theological Seminary. We're talking about gender conversation, same gender attraction. When we come back, Owen, I would love to get your take just on how we can support one another in the Christian community when people are experiencing same gender attractions. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We have on the line Owen Strand, who is an associate professor of Christian theology, and we're talking, having a great conversation that I think impacts so many of us these days around same-gender attraction, gender confusion, whether it's something we've struggled with ourselves or we have friends and family that are. It's one of those conversations that's hard to have, but so important. And Owen, we were talking so much about identity statements relative to it before the break, and that maybe that's not the best approach as to looking at this, but for somebody who is experiencing profound same-gender attractions, how can the community come around them? The Revoice Conference maybe had some helpful ideas and intuitions about that. What's the best approach to support so people don't feel so ostracized?
Yeah, I personally, just to be on record, I did not support the Revoice Conference and critiqued it in fairly strong terms online. But here's what I do believe, Peter. I do believe that the gospel is the answer for everything that ails us, especially questions of identity and patterns of sin and temptation. And I believe, furthermore, that the local church, as the Puritans used to say, is the common hospital for everything that seeks to draw us away from Christ, everything that we suffer with, and struggle in. So I believe that local churches are constituted for exactly the kind of unity and care and love that people who are experiencing gender dysphoria or same-sex attraction in an ongoing way are going to face. What we most need is the good news of Jesus Christ, that we are not bound to our pattern of attraction. We are not a slave to any feeling that is an ungodly feeling. In fact, we are absolutely loosed from that feeling. Now, as we were talking about before the break in Colossians 3, we know that the old nature, the old man, as Paul calls it, Ephesians 4, 22 to 24, that is going to pull at us. So coming to Christ does not necessarily eradicate our patterns of sin and temptation, our pattern, if you want to combine those two, of sinful temptation, as same-sex attraction is. It does mean, however, that we now have power to resist that, to confess it to God if we do sin, if we do feel that impulse, for example, of same-sex attraction or lust for someone who is not our wife. We have the power in us to confess that, to repent of it, and to be washed afresh by God. And then we have this glorious institution called the local church, where there are fellow Christians who are also fighting for holiness, and we gain strength as we walk together hand in hand as members of the covenant community. So God has not left us in the wilderness, you know, to be buffeted by the winds of external temptation or internal temptation. God has given us the means to fight our own internal pull toward perversity and depravity.
It's great stuff, Owen. Just great advice. And I think one of the questions that a lot of my students ask is, why would some people experience maybe a release or freedom from same-gender attraction while others don't? I mean, there's this sort of, you know, hope that, to use the phrase that often goes around in my classroom, you know, you can pray the gay away or something, but it doesn't work that way. So can you talk more about how to engage kind of with attractions that we don't want to have anymore?
Yeah, we don't want to, I think, say that everybody's going to have the same experience. You know, Christians have a range of experiences after they are born again and in their process of sanctification. Some people who were formerly living in a same-sex lifestyle, that sort of thing, some people end up getting married and having kids. I can name names and friends along those lines. Others are going to realize that that's not going to be their calling, and they're going to be celibate for all their life. They're not going to embrace a gay Christian identity, and they're going to fight the flesh in that sense all their days. They're no different, of course, than a single person who has what we would call a heterosexual pattern of attraction, and who is not called to marriage, who is not given a spouse. So what we have to see is that we're all battling the flesh. We don't all have the same experience in our sanctification, but we need to know that whatever call God gives us, that is how he wants to glorify himself. And the Lord wants a whole range of young men and women, you teach them, I teach them, to show a watching world that, you know, a lifestyle that is just filled with one sexual encounter with a different person after another does not satisfy, that monogamy, marriage, children, even raising children at a young age as a husband and wife, that is a beautiful thing. The Lord wants to put that in living display all around us, and Christians have a profound opportunity in this sexualized culture to do that. But Peter, we also need people to show a watching world that singleness is not dreariness. Singleness is not defeat. The Lord of the church, the Messiah, Jesus Christ, was a single man. He never had a spouse in earthly terms, in natural terms. So what we also need to show the watching world is that there are godly men and women out there who may have one, you know, temptation or another, but they are crucifying those temptations and their sinful instincts, and they have found something better than a sexual identity. They see that their identity at its core, Genesis 1, the image of God, Colossians 1:15, Christ is the true image of God. They see that their identity is much, much more than sexual. Their identity is spiritual. Their identity is grounded in Christ. And I earnestly believe, brother, that that is going to be evangelistic, honestly, especially as our culture further buys the lie that that giving into your sexual lusts and living this kind of wild sexual life of varying kinds brings you happiness. It does not bring you happiness. It brings only the judgment and wrath of God.
That's such an important and prophetic word, Owen, just into the difficult and complex situation in our culture. We have just a little bit less than a minute left here. You're working on a book contribution on transgenderism, so this is really first and foremost in some of your academic thinking, right?
It is, yeah. I'm doing a chapter for a peer-reviewed book on transgender. Again, an interesting project. Folks are going to disagree pretty strongly, who are my co-authors, and I'm going to disagree fairly strongly, if charitably, with them. But yeah, that's a neat opportunity. I also have a book coming out in 2019, As a Helicopter Flies Overhead. I have a book coming out in 2019 on the doctrine of humanity. It's called Reenchanting Humanity. So it's all about how God revivifies us. This postmodern world that we're in, as we've been talking about, kind of dehumanizes us. And I think the gospel actually enchants what God has made.
Oh, I so appreciate you coming on and just talk through these tricky issues like that. I would love to continue to have you on as your books are coming out and more conversations are happening in our country around this. So thanks so much for joining us, Owen.
Thanks a lot, Peter. Appreciate it.
More in a moment here on Faith Radio Mornings. It is 31 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and I always enjoy the bottom of the hour news where we can get into some of the fun stories with all the serious headlines and important conversations. And I know, Logan and Paul, I referenced at the top of our hour that there was a food eating update that took place this last weekend. Of course, critically important stuff. One of our favorite food eating champions here on Faith Radio Mornings is a guy by the name of Joey Chestnut, huge hot dog eating champ, but he fell short this last weekend by the Major League Eating Contest at the Wisconsin State Fair. It was a cheese curd eating contest, and he took third place this time on cheese curds. The winner, Darren Breeden, scarfed down 5 pounds, 2 ounces of cheese curds in 6 minutes. I can't even get my head around five pounds of cheese. When I go to Costco or Sam's Club or something, even a 2 pound block of cheese seems daunting to me to eat in like a month. And they're putting down 5 pounds of cheese in 6 minutes.
This is one food and eating competition I could get behind. I took a 2 pound block of Colby Jack with me as my only snack on a 6 hour drive, and you better believe it was gone by the time I got there.
Logan, I'm going to bring some Colby Jack into the studio tomorrow, and we're going to have 6 minutes together. And we're going to see what you can pound through in that time. Well, we'll go through the rest of the news when we come back. Adam Carrington will join us, and we're going to talk about Omarosa and the White House and Apprentice. Oh, gee, I just can't wait for that conversation. Stay with us on Faith Radio Mornings. Last Friday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by Dr. Gary Stratton, who talks with us about spiritual disciplines and worldview. And he was talking about how so many of us these days just live with this baseline high level of stress and adrenaline.
My boys were kids. They loved to go to this pet store where they would feed the mice to the giant snakes. And, man, when you drop a mouse into the terrarium with the snake, you would think that the mouse would try to run away or would get his little paws up and start fighting. Instead, he'd do the last thing you'd ever imagine. He would start washing himself. It's called adrenaline-induced psychosis, where you are so caught between fight or flight, you do neither. You just find something that comforts you. And I guess nothing comforts you quite like a good lick if you're a mouse. And so but what's so strange is the mouse starts washing itself, and the closer the snake gets, the faster it starts washing itself. It looks like a DVD on fast forward, and then, you know, suddenly it's all over. But, you know, my boys would cheer, and I would just think, I've seen that before. That's me. When I get stressed, I start doing things that comfort me, and they're not normally always very healthy things, but I just start doing them faster and faster because I'm terrified. And I think that explains so much of the things that go on in leaders who fall and the things that are going on in private in our churches, is because we just can't handle the stress.
With what seemed to be such increasing stress levels that we deal with week in and week out, this is such an important conversation with Dr. Stratton. Logan, if we wanted to catch that entire segment that he walked us through, where can we go?
Visit Faith Radio Mornings, myfaithradio.com, and under the Faith Radio Mornings tab, you can click on our podcasts or search Gary Stratton.
Up next on Faith Radio Mornings, we're joined by Adam Carrington, who joins us regularly from Hillsdale College, professor of political science there. I'm going to ask Adam first about this situation in the White House, where it seems like the reality show The Apprentice and our policies around our country came together for one lovely time. So stay with us for more in just a moment.
Bible studies are taking place in the most unusual places. Would you guess the United States Capitol building in Washington, D.C.? This is Jim Garlow. In our U.S. Capitol building, a number of Bible studies are taking place as members of Congress come together to study the Bible. The church I pastor is one of those organizations who sponsor ministry in the Capitol building. We're also launching Bible studies in other agencies and departments across Washington, D.C. It's encouraging to know how much Bible study is taking place by people in governmental authority. God's Spirit is at work in places you might never have expected. We all hear bad news every day, but isn't it exciting to know that the good news of the gospel is being presented on an ongoing daily basis and that members of Congress are the ones who are participating? You bet it is. This is Jim Garlow. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
It is 20 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and we are joined on the line by Adam Carrington, who joins me regularly to talk through some of the different headlines of the day. Love having him on. It's been a little bit since we chatted. Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Well, you know, we're doing well around here. We just had some really important headlines cross our feed, and that had to do with cheese curd eating and the fact that Joey Chestnut, our favorite hot dog eating champion around here, he fell third to a guy that ate 5 pounds of cheese curds in 6 minutes. But Logan made me aware that cheese curds are distinctly a Midwest and even Wisconsin phenomenon. So, Adam, you're in Michigan. Do you know what a cheese curd is?
I do, but I didn't know till I moved to Michigan, and I grew up in Ohio, so it took to move up to there to figure it out, but I am making up for lost time now that I've figured out they exist.
Oh, it's one of those things, isn't it, where the first cheese curd is like is just outstanding, but then it's a law of diminishing returns from there. You eat the rest of them like you don't really know why, you just kind of keep rifling through that tray.
Well, other things don't diminish as I eat them, but they're things that exercise. I'd rather exercise get rid of. But yeah, I can understand that. But I do envy Michiganders and people from Wisconsin, Minnesota, all the ones that knew this a lot longer than I did.
Well, thanks for joining us as you do. I referenced already, and I know it's one of those interesting headlines coming out of Washington where Omarosa has reared her head again in these conversations with President Trump, and there's a lot of back and forth. I'll have to start with a clip that was on Meet the Press where there were some secret tapes that were released that referenced her time with John Kelly and when she was let go.
Can I ask you a couple of questions? Is the president aware of this going on?
Don't. Let's not go down the road. This is a non-negotiable discussion.
I don't want to negotiate. I've never had a chance to talk to you, General Kelly. Yeah, so if this is my departure, I'd like to have at least an opportunity to understand.
We can talk another time. This has to do with some pretty serious integrity violations.
Well, and of course, from that point on, Adam, it's been a lot of back and forth where the president has questioned her IQ and she has brought up that the president is a bit of a zoo in terms of his ability to mentally process things. Where are we with this, Adam? Are there any implications we need to think about?
Wow. Yeah. Where do you start with this kind of he said, she said? And I think that you can say two things at the same time, and they're deeply related, that I think Omarosa is someone who is probably not to be trusted unless something has been independently verified, and even her interpretation of things like the tape would need to be verified, because I think she really does seem to be someone who has wanted to be on the side that gets her publicity, the side that gets her renown or recognition or attention. At the same time, it seems, you know, this is the kind of person she was when the president's team hired her to do African American outreach, to be part of the White House. So I think the fact that the White House would have a person like her working there also doesn't bode well or doesn't look well on them, because I think this just shows that, you know, President Trump is a very effective communicator in many ways because he's a showman. You know, he has that flair that he got that you saw in The Apprentice, but it also seems to attract the sensational, and it seems to attract a lot of problems that make her someone who I think unfortunately fit into at least part of the White House, even as her actions now sort of show her someone that should have never gotten there in the first place.
Yeah, she very much had a high profile and high charisma level on season one of The Apprentice. She was probably the most famous person to ever come out of that show. But even when you listen to the tapes, knowing that they were secret tapes, that means there wasn't political posturing going on when Kelly said that she was guilty of integrity violations. And so there seems like there's some substance maybe there. But do you know anything further about why she was let go?
I don't. In fact, those coming to light, it's interesting that she would be perfectly willing to release the tapes that accuse her of ethical violations. That's quite a I don't know what the calculus was on that. And I think what it shows there is just more reasons to wonder why she was there in the first place, because the even though those violations weren't specified, they seem to again be her using her position. They said there were some issues with money, use of government vehicles, things like that, that just show that it seemed that she wanted to use the office that she had, the power she had in the White House, for her own personal gain. To be honest, similar to some of the things we saw with Scott Pruitt at the EPA, where just on even on small levels, wanting to make use of government funds or government personnel to make your life better, not to serve your country, which is what obviously should be the number one priority for someone working there. So, again, it hurts her credibility, even though she's the one that released it.
Hmm. There's some political risk here, I would imagine, for the president as well, when you are coming out against an African-American female who, again, is extremely well-spoken and by all means that she seems quite intelligent. So to call her low IQ and to say the things he's been saying about her relative to the male-female relationships and dynamics going on in our country, there's a lot of risk here for him to go that direction, I would think.
It's interesting. I think his response will probably, in my opinion, reinforce the very bifurcated opinion on of the president. On one hand, yeah, there are going to be people who see this as attempting to destroy the character of someone who he himself built up before. That the fact that she's an African American woman, I'm sure people will play into and be angry about and see this is the way he treats people that aren't like him. On the other hand, he's gotten a lot of respect for being a very strong guy who punches back, and he really doesn't care who the target is. He's going to defend himself, and usually tends to defend himself not by making arguments about the particular issue, but he normally hits back at the character intelligence of the person that has criticized him. And he's got people that really see that as a sign of strength, a sign that he fights. So I'm not saying that whether he was right to call her that at all, or whether that's the response one should take, even if someone's being scandalously accused maliciously. But I think this is entirely in line with what people have already known about him. And so therefore, I think it'll only reinforce some of the negative and positive perceptions of him that already exist.
It's Adam Carrington, professor of political science at Hillsdale College, regular contributor to our show. You do such a good job, Adam, talking us through these headlines from a faith perspective. And when we come back, there were a lot of headlines coming out of Washington, D.C. this weekend about white nationalists and Antifa. And I would love to get your perspective on the difference between these two and just helping us understand the divisiveness on our country. So more with Adam Carrington when we come back in just a moment. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We are joined on the line by Adam Carrington. And Adam, we were talking about some of the headlines, obviously, Omarosa before, but there's more that happened this weekend, including on the anniversary of the Charlottesville clashes that took shape last year that were so difficult. We saw some more marching happening in Washington, D.C., where at least characterized there were white nationalists marching and then huge crowds of resistance to the white nationalists, this Antifa organization. Can you kind of talk us through what happened this weekend in Washington, D.C.?
Sure. There was supposed to be what was called Unite the Right 2, and Unite the Right 1 was the Charlottesville demonstrations that, as you said, it ended in violence and all sorts of national controversy. This was supposed to be the sequel in D.C., not in Charlottesville, and it ended up being not a lot of bark beforehand and not much bite when it actually occurred. The They said that about 20 to 25 protesters, or I'm sorry, white nationalists showed up. Actually, a number of white nationalist groups said not to show up because of fears of being outed and having bad repercussions for people's jobs, things like that. I think it really just showed what a disaster the Charlottesville rally was last year and how much damage it did to a movement that was really thinking that it had a chance to come out into the daylight and be part of the public mainstream of national discussion. I think that for now has been really, I think the door has been shut on that hard. And I think you then had, even in Charlottesville, the Antifa protesters themselves getting into all sorts of trouble, you know, being violent, being shouting derogatory things about law and order. So, you know, in some ways, the sequel was worthy of the original, not because the same tragic events happened, but the same animosity and problematic notion of what human beings are and what Americans are came out again.
And so, Adam, when we're talking about the scale of these protests, we're not talking about thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of people. Is this really a news item that we should even be paying attention to at this point? Because what gets up on the news obviously begins to impact the way we think about things, and we're already so divided anyway. Was this really a newsworthy event, other than the fact it was on the anniversary of the Charlottesville experience?
I think really it would not have been worthy of attention if you hadn't had the events of Charlottesville and the fact that major political figures, the president and others, got sucked into it and had to comment on it. I really think that this is really just an outgrowth of that. And the fact that it's August, there was this, you know, sort of, this is a dark joke, but the joke that it seemed like on the news, children only go missing in August. Because that's a more down month for news. That's not true, but I think you're right that that kind of thing has, you know, as that has made us more scared that our children are in danger, even though I don't think they are. In the same way, I think covering these things, except for the connection to Charlottesville last year, makes us think worse of ourselves and our country than maybe we do, because we magnify the worst parts that maybe aren't the dominant parts.
Yeah, and it sure seems like the division is what gains the headlines. I know I watched the special elections a little bit last week, and in terms of these vacant House of Representative seats and who might get elected for that, as well as some of the governor races. At the end of the day, when I was watching both back and forth between CNN and Fox News, for example, it almost felt like I was watching Hillary and Trump again. They made it sound as if this is the most important thing at the top of the mind for news. But we're just talking about small seats here. What was your take on that?
Yeah, on one hand, I would say they need to find a way for a 24-hour cable news for people to keep watching, so everything gets turned up to 10. I think right now we have a atmosphere where the people that are paying attention to politics really are, I think, overstating the dominance of politics in everyone's life. At the same time, I think the elections themselves, you don't want to read too much into the special elections. They all have their special circumstances. That's part of why they're special. But at the same time, I think that you do take away from them that this fall election is going to be one that could be a struggle for Republicans. At the same time, I do think that you're right that we shouldn't make these out to be – you can't make every special election out to be, you know – England defending itself in 1940 against the Nazis, and I think we tend to take everything to that level, and I think that again is another thing that doesn't show a healthy set of public discourse in our country and in our politics.
Super helpful on that one, Adam. You know, we have just about a minute left here, and as believers in walking out faith and part of our citizenship is in heaven is how we describe our journey ahead. What kind of attention should we pay to the news? How do we sort this out? What is important from a Christian standpoint as we're engaged in these political conversations?
I think understanding, and I think I've said something to this effect before, that politics and citizenship are important. They're created by God. They're part of who we are as human beings, but they're not ultimate. That we should not make who we are all about our race, our class, our party, even our country, even though you know, especially our country and our citizenship are important, and that we should understand that in the end, God is in control. He is the master of history, and that he will bring things to his will and his purposes, and that we should work toward that, but we should not not let ourselves become despondent or angered or act as if this world is our home.
Adam, you're the best. I appreciate you joining us on Faith Radio Mornings to talk through so many of these things from politics and the headlines. When we have you back, we're going to be a lot closer to the hearings around Judge Kavanaugh. That's going to be a really interesting time with the Supreme Court justice. So hopefully you'll join us again here in a couple weeks, Adam, on that one.
I'd be happy to. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, in the meantime, Logan is going to send you 5 pounds of cheese curd in the mail, so they should be nice and spoiled by the time they get to you.
Okay, I will leave that on someone's doorstep then, if I'm not a friend of them.
Have a great rest of your morning, Adam. We'll take a short break and wrap up the first hour of our show. I love talking with Adam Carrington like that. So much of it isn't even scripted. I can just throw different questions at him, and he comes back in this articulate and accessible way to help us think about these headlines. And excited also, too, for Hour 2 coming up, in which Bruce Ashford is going to be joining us. He's another regular contributor to the show, and he's often published nationwide on Fox News, Daily Caller, and he's going to be talking with us about the change in doctrine in the Catholic Church from allowing capital punishment to now prohibiting capital punishment, and what a sea change that is for our understanding and what's behind that. So, well, we'll take a break for the top of the hour news. When we come back, Bruce Ashford will be joining us to talk about this great change in doctrine in the Catholic Church.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.